Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I'm Patrick Gilbert, the COO of Adventure Media Group. This is a podcast where we talk about digital advertising, business consulting, and career growth. Joining me today is one of Adventure Media's senior strategists, Esty Nadoff. Esty's been working on our team for a number of years, and among some of her many talents includes the art of presentations. Esty is known for not just being extremely well-versed in developing beautiful presentations for our clients, but also in just the overall communication space. I generally lean on Esty a lot whenever we have a big client pitch coming up or a conference I'll be speaking for. And I really just love to get her ideas just anytime we're talking about this space. So we're gonna be talking about presentations today, and specifically delivering some lessons from a book that I really enjoyed called Presenting to Win by an author named Jerry Weissman, who's a consultant who has helped a lot of Fortune 500 companies, specifically with IPO roadshows and creating pitch presentations. But there's a lot of really good value that comes out of this book that can help anyone get better at telling a story, delivering a message, and overall just giving better presentations. Esty, great to be here. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very honored.
Amazing. And
yes, we both know I love presentations, so I'm excited to be talking about it with you.
Incredible. So the main thing here is I think most people are not great at giving presentations. And I think I would fall into that category until I really studied this pretty extensively. There's research that shows that the average attention span of an audience is about 7 minutes. And TED Talks are actually structured at, they're generally about 18 minutes, 18 to 20 minutes, because the people at TED have found that their audiences their attention span will last around that amount of time. But those TED speakers are very engaging. So none of us are TED speakers, at least yet. So we often go into these meetings that are gonna last a half hour, hour, even longer. And we're surprised when we're not able to get buy-in from whomever our audience is. Generally, you're giving a presentation because you want your audience to do something. And oftentimes that fails because of one of the five cardinal sins that Weissman outlines in the book Presenting to Win. So those cardinal sins are number one, no clear point, no audience benefit, no clear flow, they're too detailed, or they're too long. And we're gonna dive into a few of these concepts today. In particular, the first three cardinal sins are ones that I think are really useful and really practical. But the biggest takeaway for me is Weissman talks about this concept of a data dump, which kind of ruins many presentations. He defines that as an excessive, meaningless, shapeless outpouring of data without a purpose or plan. And I think all of us are guilty of having data dumps in our presentations that we think it's important because we think that for our audience to understand anything, they need to understand everything. So we just kind of go down this wormhole of describing all the different things here. And at that point, or somewhere along the way, we lose the audience. We fall victim to what Weissman refers to as MIGO, which is mine eyes glaze over. But just talking about this, I mean, Esty, what do you think? I mean, is there a way to think differently about this whole data dump concept? Because I think just too many details, too much unimportant information. How do we start to think about this differently so that we know that we don't fall victim to it?
Yeah, I think that leads and segues us straight into the cardinal sin number one, which is having no clear point. The point of a presentation is obviously to convince your audience of something or to get to a point B. You're taking the audience from point A to point B. So there's this dynamic shift in which is persuasion. So point A is where your audience starts. So there's kind of three different types of audiences. There's the uninformed, they're knowing little about your topic. Then there's the dubious type of audience. They're skeptical and ready to question your claims. And then there's the resistant type of audience, where they're firmly committed to a position contrary to what you're presenting or what you're asking them to do. So point B is where you want them to be or what you want them to do. So you need to take those three types of audiences through three different stages. So you're taking the uninformed audience, you want them to understand, the dubious audience to actually believe, and the resistant audience to act. So they're not necessarily separate goals, but rather the three stages in reaching a single ultimate goal. So I think the whole concept of getting a good presentation out and being successful is really starting with your point B. I've been a big fan recently. I'm reading the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the topics they talk about is really just in life in general of effective people is really starting with your point B, starting with your end goal in mind. So you really have to take that concept and apply it to presentations too. So there's so many presentations, as you're saying, Patrick, where there's no clear point. But if you start with your point B, where you want your audience to be, then you kind of work backwards to figure out the information that you want to include in your presentation. So it's not being guilty of a data dump, essentially. So like, let's talk about some examples of what like these presentations on a practical level, what would that point be?
So, I mean, just going back to your previous point about like the audiences, I think that a lot of audiences fit into all three of those categories. Like they could be uninformed, dubious, and resistant. And I think that's like part of the process that you're going through. Like you have to start assuming they know nothing or assuming like you have to figure out where they are in that process and you kind of work through all those things. And yeah, I've like as cheesy as it sounds, like I've been working on some presentations lately where I write down my point B at the top and it's often long and it's often too long and complicated. It's too many things. And I think part of that exercise is like, what do you really want the audience to do? What is your point here? So one of the things that we've talked about is like, okay, what is the difference between a presentation to a prospect where the point B is you should hire an agency? And I think that presentation would look very different from you should hire our agency, because the former is pitching to somebody who might be doing their marketing in-house or they don't have an agency, whatever. And I think a point of the presentation is showing the value of just agencies collectively have. And that should be your entire presentation. And you should stop there, drive that point home, get them to point B, and then circle back. Hopefully have another meeting with that prospect. Don't try and do it all at once. Don't try and close the deal in that first sitting, because they're clearly very far from that ultimate goal that you want them to do, which is become a customer of yours or a client of yours. But, and that whole thing looks very different from you should hire our agency. Because now when you're having that conversation, you're assuming that this audience has a whole different worldview. They're coming in with a different level of information. They're informed in a certain way. They're dubious about certain things and they're resistant about certain things, which looks very different from the audience in your previous presentation. So when you're saying what, you know, you should hire our agency, you're talking more about what sets you apart from another agency. And these small little details, I think, can really shape the way that you shape a presentation.
And one other presentation that I've been working on recently and am in middle of presenting it, as it was too detailed in a way, there's too much information in there to be doing it all in one sitting. It's actually an industry research presentation. And technically, I feel like we're very guilty of like industry research presentations are just kind of a way of a data dump to show that like we did our due diligence in looking through your industry and understanding it so we can market it properly. But really what we took a step back with this industry research presentation is saying, what does the client want out of this? What do we want out of this? And it was essentially to come up with a strategy based off of the industry research. So that's how we went through the entire presentation and creating it. It was including only industry research information that was relevant to help crafting the strategy that we wanted to take place.
Yeah, I love that. And I think going back, there have been so many presentations that we've done over the years. And again, we're using the word presentation a lot here, but a lot of the times this might just mean a call with a client and not determining what is the difference between like your standard update call or a presentation. Like that's an important delineation that we haven't really figured out until recently. but that's an important thing to figure out. And then as far as like some of these presentations are just like meant to prove that you're doing good work. And that's okay, as long as that's your point B. Like I think we should all stop trying to dress up and disguise, like, look at all this research. And then the client's like, cool, like, now what? And you're like, oh, look over here. And that's, I guess, kind of going to the next point is from the book, it's the what's in it for you, or the abbreviation is WIFY, W-I-I-F-Y, which sounds ridiculous because it just sounds weird to say WIFY, but what's in it for you? And that's a really important, every single point that you make during a presentation should have a very clear what's in it for you. If it doesn't fit, and if it ultimately doesn't fit back up to your point B, then it should be removed. And I think that's the best way to say, okay, what fits into this data dump and what doesn't? Because if there's not a clear audience benefit, then you should remove it altogether. And that brings us to cardinal sin number two, no audience benefit. So this is the whole Migo, mine eyes glaze over type of analogy that, that Weissman writes about, is if you're not making it clear to people what's in it for them, they're going to stop listening. It's just human nature. And I think, so he gives a lot of examples in the book, but one that stood out is a SaaS company that Weissman worked with, he consulted with to help them revise their pitch deck over the years to new clients. And they used to talk about how their technology was a pioneer and like helped this radical shift in technology. And to the business owner, to the CEO of this IT company, they thought it was a no-brainer. Like, we provide telecommunication software that is not just better, but it's also cheaper than what some of our target customers already have in place. It's a no-brainer. And they went into these presentations with that mentality. And Weissman came in and was like, no, this doesn't work, because in the tone of your voice, you're sort of alienating people by making it seem as if they're behind the curve and that they're missing out on this radical shift. So instead, the what's in it for you principle outlines that your company, this telecommunications IT SaaS company, allows you to shepherd these people through. And it really changes the overall marketing positioning of that company. And once they implemented that, they changed their pitches. They really had that what's in it for you focus, trying to really empathize with who their audience is and what they want to get out of whether this presentation or this overall relationship, really allowed them to increase their close rates. So it's really important, though, that every single point has its own what's in it for you. And some of the tools to help you validate that is by asking yourself, like, saying a point and then asking or completing the sentence with, this is important to you, my audience, because, or what does this mean for you? Why am I telling you this? Who cares? Or you make a point and then say, and therefore, and if you can't complete that sentence with something really valuable, then get it out, because it's not actually moving the needle. It's not allowing your customers to get to point B. The other part of the WIFY, the audience benefit piece, is to be very clear about who the you is. So Weissman consulted with Netflix before they went public. So Reed Hastings, who's the CEO of Netflix, was working with him, and one of his pitches included the headline of rent all the movies you want for $20 a month. And that seems great. Seems like an awesome idea for a business. But we're not pitching the product. We're pitching the business model to potential investors. So instead of rent all the movies you want for $20 a month, they changed the headline to millions of movie lovers can easily rent DVDs for just $20 a month. So what they did there was they identified that the audience in this perspective, was different than what the previous headline spoke to. They made a very simple change. And I mean, Netflix has certainly been successful since they IPO'd. So, you know, be that as it may. But I think just keeping the audience at the core of the presentation is probably the most essential way to make sure that you're dragging them through your presentation and getting them to point B as effectively as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So cardinal sin number three is no clear flow. This happens a lot when you have presentations that are, they seem unprepared or unpolished. They seem that they kind of go off on tangents. They ramble a little bit. And there's a big problem that we have. I think this is especially true with when we're talking about strategy and performance updates on campaigns, because you're just going to start, a client will ask a question and you'll just go off and explain 10 other different things to try and explain that one question. And that might be a lack of preparation, but really because the person presenting, the person in charge, didn't really develop what should the proper flow be for the presentation. And we'll outline in a minute, there's 16 different ways to structure an organization, present flow. But in order to determine the flow, you need to first figure out the right way to develop the content of your presentation. The first step here is to get everything on paper with a brainstorming process and then start to categorize things in a way that the flow itself should jump off the paper. Like you should first have the content out there before you determine the way to structure it. You have to first do the right brain process before the left brain, the creativity, let's get it all out there. And unfortunately, most people stop there. And that's when you have something that is a data dump, when they're just the creative, just the right brain stuff, or just the left brain side where it's too logical, not enough creativity in place. But Essie, talk to me about your thoughts on like the brainstorming stage of creating a presentation.
Yeah, and I think the brainstorming stage is the most important and fundamental part, right? And it depends on how someone wants to go about it. If it's a team brainstorming session, if it's just internal, kind of doing your own thing. But the idea would be that you're just writing everything down, doing that excessive data dump. It could be in a Google Doc, it could be on a whiteboard with, you know, all your information there. But the concept would be to try to get everything down first and then kind of clusterizing, would that be a word? Clustering everything into different sections and then kind of taking it from kind of creating different concepts, different pods based on the data that you have. And then that will help begin to clearly have a flow by categorizing everything and clustering it properly. But I think there's a few different things to talk about, right? When you're doing that clustering, when you're doing that process where you're going to sort and select and eliminate, add, organize all these different raw materials, all these different data points that you have into a form that flows more logically. And you're bringing the audience from point A to point B. So there's a few different things to think about. There's different parameters of your presentation. So you kind of have to think of the presentation as a blank canvas within a frame. So the idea would be you have to keep in mind that point B, you have to start with the objective in sight and work towards it. You also have that audience that we discuss in analyzing where what your intended audience knows and what it needs to know in order to do what you want them to do or believe what you want them to believe. So you have to think about how you can make the benefits to your audience crystal clear. Then there's also like the external factors that can impact your message. So some will be positive, some will be negative. But for example, when making a strategy pitch, the fact that there is a rapidly expanding market for your specific product would be a positive external factor. While let's say the emergence of a new competitor in your competitive landscape would be more of a negative external factor. So you have to keep in mind the external factors and then also the setting. So I think this is something like we have to think about also in terms of the physical setting of your presentation. So will it be, how much time will be allotted? That takes a play into how much information you want to be adding into your presentation. Where will it be? Is it more of a discussion group? Is it more of just you presenting and then ask questions at the end? And I think that's something that like we really need to keep in mind when it comes to creating presentations. But all of this plays into that brainstorming session to help generate the different ideas and different varying importance ideas into those different sections.
And so I think what you're really describing here is just like, do the word vomit exercise and then try and think about what are the common pieces of this together. Is it an, oh, we have a bunch of stuff here that all seems to fit under a category of negative externalities. Okay, maybe there should be a point in the presentation where we talk about negative externalities. Oh, there's other, there's other things here that are positive. There's other things here that are separate from that. So how can we start to group these? Weissman uses the analogy of like, you group these things together as if they're Roman columns and say, oh, well, that's important. And so you have your major columns. And then at the end of that process, you're going to have stuff that doesn't fit into those columns. And that should be removed. That's the data dump stuff where you start to trim the fat. Okay, does it fit into the Roman column? Is there a clear audience benefit? Does this help progress to point B? If not, get it out. It's fine. Don't feel guilty. And then once you have all that, then you can kind of look at the different forms or flow structures to figure out how you're going to group this together. We're not going to go into detail with all of these. I'm just going to give a couple of examples, but the book does, Presenting the Win, does go into detail with all 16. But just to read them out, we have modular, chronological, physical, spatial, problem/solution, issues/actions, opportunity/leverage, form function, features benefits, case study, argument fallacy, compare contrast, matrix, parallel tracks, rhetorical questions, and numerical. Now that's a mouthful. And it shouldn't like, nope. Again, what I probably just did was had everyone in the audience glaze their eyes over. However, my point here is that every single presentation can be different. It doesn't have to follow the exact same structure every time. The first one that I listed here is modular. That's something that like I think all too often we fail victim to, or we choose that because we haven't thought creatively about, oh, maybe we should frame this under like a case study. Maybe we should be looking at this from a form function flow structure. And until you know what that is, you're never going to consider it. A modular is where you're just kind of, there's not a clear, the cadence of it is sort of arbitrary. We have all these different, say, Roman columns, these major points, and they can kind of be piecemealed in any way and moved in back and forth. The example here is like, if you're presenting financial documents, it really doesn't matter. Like if you use the balance sheet or the income statement first, like most CFOs, like it doesn't really matter. Some people just like have a preference. There's not necessarily a need for it. But if you're presenting an investor pitch, there's probably a reason why something becomes before or after the next piece. So as you start to learn more about these concepts, I think it's really important and allows you to realize the ideal flow structure for whatever you're trying to present. Right now, I'm working on a presentation that I'm going to be giving at a conference next week. And when I started this whole process, I really tried to go by the book in terms of the brainstorming session and back to what we finally ended up with. And when I originally wrote down my point B, I assumed that the proper flow structure for my presentation was going to be problem solution, meaning you outline a problem that's taking place that marketers experience, and then here's my solution. And in the book, there's like a framework for how you do those types of presentations. However, as I went through my brainstorming session, I actually was able to come up with a few different ideas that completely gave me a whole different angle. And it actually, what presented itself was that there's another company that I'm using as an analogy throughout the entire presentation. So I'm now following a parallel track flow structure because I've gone through this step-by-step process outlined here. And I happen to think that this presentation is 10 times better than it would have been if I just took the problem solution assumption from the start and just started my left brain process of fitting it into a presentation. So I really do think that your whole point about the brainstorming process and getting everything out there and then grouping it together really does make a significant impact, especially when you can say, oh, I've never done a presentation that's done parallel tracks before. I've never done a form function flow structure before. This might be an opportunity for me to be able to see what that's like. So I think it's really cool.
I'm excited to see that presentation.
Thanks. We still have some work to do. And I'm definitely going to need your input, by the way. So those are the first three cardinal sins. And I think just by themselves, so it's no clear point, no audience benefit, and no proper flow. Those are the first three. The last two are too detailed and too long. And there's not a lot of practical information that we kind of want to dive into here, because I think just keeping all these cardinal sins in mind will help people dramatically improve their presentations and their communications with whatever they're trying to get across. The last thing I want to leave with, though, is the idea of an opening gambit. Because we started this podcast talking about, hey, audiences will only retain information for about 7 minutes. TED Talks go 18 minutes. But how do we get information? How do we get attention to start? How do we deserve that? And good presenters will tell you that it's with a good, strong opening gambit. Meaning, what is that cool thing that you start off with? What's your, what's your hook at the beginning? And I remember learning about this, like, in English class in high school, where you can start a thesis paper with like a quote or a fact or something like that. But Weissman outlines good opening gambits. I believe there's 7 of them. You have anecdotes. You have a question that you can ask the audience. You make an analogy. You can use an aphorism. A factoid, provide some retrospective or perspective, or a quote. So very, very similar to what we all learned in 10th grade English class. But SD, in your experience, what sort of thoughts do you have around the opening gambit? What works? What doesn't work? What's too cheesy? Does any of this actually make a difference?
Yeah, I think it's like, this year Netflix came out with The Queen's Gambit. So we all learned about the opening moves in chess. But I think it's a similar concept here in terms of presenting. You have like your entire success largely depends on those first few crucial moves early on in the game, right, in chess. But you can't win a chess game with your opening move, but you can definitely lose it. So the same applies here, where we want to make sure with our opening gambits that we're choosing the right options. We're thinking about what our audience wants to hear in order to get them interested, get them, excited about it. I feel like I've been at so many presentations where it's like a question and then it's like, raise your hand if this. And like, maybe that's just a little cliche. I feel like I like these other ones that you mentioned and you brought up, the factoid, retrospective, perspective, anecdote. Like these are different unique options that aren't as typical. And I think they're definitely an option people should consider.
Yeah, definitely. Those good, like you always remember a cheesy. And I've been in a million of these conferences where they're like, raise your hand if you wish you could grow your business. And it's like, okay, like that's a bad opening gambit. But you also remember a really good one. But I think the best example of this is, I love the story of Finding Nemo and how that came to be. It's outlined in the book Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. But Andrew Stanton was the guy at Pixar that conceptualized and wrote and would go on to direct Finding Nemo. And it was such high pressure, especially back then where they were only making a couple movies a year, that you really needed, if you wanted an idea to get made into a movie, you really need to have a strong pitch. So he put his blood, sweat, and tears into this pitch. And it was like an hour long presentation about how they were going to tell the story and, what sort of technology they were going to use and all these different things that were going to make this a blockbuster hit. And at the very end of it, the entire room of Pixar's board and Steve Jobs is in the room and everybody went silent. And John Lasseter, who was the chief creative officer at the time, broke the silence by just smiling and saying, "You had me at fish." And I guess whatever it was in his opening line saying like, and again, we have no idea what that was, but whatever his opening gambit was powerful enough to get his audience, the chief creative officer, who's really the person, the most important person in the room, he completely won them over. So you can absolutely be able to do this. Even if this is sort of a dramatized story, you can absolutely get this a point with a really strong opening gambit. But the key is to just capture the audience's attention and then gradually bring them into whatever that proper focus or the flow is of your presentation. So in closing, I think we've talked about a lot of different things here, but the main thing that I've taken away from this entire experience is to really be mindful of the data dump. I think so many presentations are bad because of the data dump, and we really need to be mindful of it. We need to start with a strong opening gambit. We need to make our point B abundantly clear. We need to illuminate the audience benefit, and we need to be mindful of the WIFI concept. And then the last piece here is we need to practice proper preparation. We really need to put in the time and the effort to go through this brainstorming session. As you know, sounds cheesy, the whole whiteboard thing. I'm telling you, I'm telling you from experience, going through that process that you outlined before, SD, is so beneficial to be able to deliver something that is clean and has proper flow. Do you have any other points or thoughts on this whole concept here?
No, I love it. I do think this is so helpful and like practical tips for starting presentations and actually doing presentations that are successful in the goal that you are trying to achieve. I guess my question is, it's too intimidating. Like, how to actually start on a practical level? One thing, if it's one thing, what's the most important thing that you would say to help, you know, guide the process a bit more?
So I think it depends on what someone's largest opportunity is. So I think depending on who you are, and maybe listen, like it's helpful to have a colleague or a friend or somebody point out like go over these things and say, hey, listen, like here's a couple of new cardinal rules or cardinal sins rather that I learned about. What do you think is my biggest problem? For some people, it's the data dump thing. For others, it's the no clear flow. I think that's actually been a huge miss with our agency and presentations that I've seen is that too many of our presentations over the years have been modular. And with a couple of these tricks, we can make it more focused on that. But I think all of them are helpful. It's just like run through this checklist in your mind. Be like, okay, cool. What's my point B? All right, that's sort of a point B. Who's my audience? All right, we're keeping in line with the audience. Like, it's not as if there's a way to do this perfectly, but just being mindful of these as you kind of go down the list and try and be self-aware about what you're good at and what you're lacking in, and then try to work on that. And I think everyone can be able to make, can improve the way that they give presentations. And the whole reason, by the way, that this came up, I mean, just to do kind of a side anecdote here, is we recently had a day of learning. We refer to it at Adventure Media as DOLA, which is a day of learning and happiness. The acronym started as a joke and then it just kind of stuck. But everyone kind of has a chance to present something that they've been working on, that they found interesting, to teach the rest of the team about whatever it is they want to. And before going into that, we all talked about these concepts. We all went over the cardinal sins. And I was absolutely blown away by all the presentations that day. I mean, we sat through 20 some presentations by everyone on the team, and we had done this same type of DOLA thing 3 months ago. And just the progress that was made collectively across the board from every single person that was now just mindful of these things, it blew me away. So if you just kind of keep these things in mind, I promise you that all that you will be able to significantly improve the main goal, which is, hey, we need to inform audiences, we need to make them less dubious and less skeptical, and we need to be able to get them to convince them to point B. We need to motivate them to do whatever we want them to do. And these tricks have certainly been helpful for me, and I think they'll be helpful for others as well.
Amazing.
Excellent. Essie, thanks for coming on. This is fantastic. Definitely have to have you back on again. Last question. Where would you hide a dead body?
On the second page of a search results on Google.
Perfect. Thank you. This has been the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I'm Patrick Gilbert, Venture Media Group. We'll catch you next time.